with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Elk City, Clinton, Bedlam. College football playoff rankings, all that stuff. We've got the longtime voice of the Red Tornadoes, Dennis Smith, coming up in the next segment at 9:20. Preview the matchup on Friday night between the Elks and the Running Reds. So let's just get to it. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. If you want to chime in with something else, feel free. 225-9698. If you're outside the listening area, a couple of ways to listen. KADSAM.com, or you can download the Paragon app, the Paragon Communications app. All radio stations. It's got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. Of course, Big Elk TV will be live 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kick for the Elks and Clinton in the state semifinals. Let's see. What else? Penny News is in the app. Podcasts. If you miss the show, find us. iTunes, KADSAM.com. Let's move on. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
I'm just trying to get everything we have to say into a small window here because there's just so much to talk about.
We got a lot to talk about. We got to do like 3 days of shows
in one. Yeah, it's kind of.
We're not here tomorrow. Obviously, we are off Friday. If people don't know,
that's right.
Yeah, This is it. This is our week.
Everything you have to say about the matchups before the weekend has to be said today. Start with the college football playoff rankings last night.
Yes.
Anything surprise you with the order in which the teams were ranked?
Not really. I think it was all kind of – it's getting clearer and clearer, which every year it does. It gets clearer and clearer who the top 10 are, really. And I think that way it's shaking out right now, there's scenarios where all teams in the top 10 have a chance.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, it opened up a lot for the Big 12.
100%.
That's where I'm going. And who's at number 10? Yeah. So my point is there's still a little parity left, a little clear picture coming down to it. So, I mean, it didn't really shock me. I think we all knew that's where OU and OSU would be. You knew Baylor would be between them somewhere, and we knew Oregon would drop like a rock. So that's so I wasn't too shocked.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, OU fans, just simmer down. If you win twice – against Oklahoma State, you're not going to be ranked behind Baylor or Ole Miss. That's not happening. Which it's kind of the charade of it, right? I mean, we're still this isn't the pecking order, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. With what's there, it's not. I mean, obviously Georgia and Alabama both can't win because they're going to play each other. But to me, and then of course Ohio State and Michigan both can't win. And so you take those one, you know, let's just take for argument's sake, Alabama and Michigan out. I don't believe for a second that the pecking order goes Georgia, Ohio State, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. I just don't believe that. I still don't believe, in my mind, they have the cojones to put Cincinnati in over, let's say, one loss Notre Dame and one loss Oklahoma. I don't believe that.
No. No, I agree.
I just don't. And it doesn't have to be those two. It could be. You know, obviously, if either Ohio State or Michigan, whoever wins that game, beats whoever comes out of the West, that team is in.
Yeah, one loss.
One loss, Big Ten is
champ
in.
Champ is in, yeah.
Georgia wins Saturday against a lowly Georgia Tech. It doesn't make a darn what happens in the SEC title game. They're in, period.
Yeah.
So, you know, that. But then
the
only after
question
that,
is 1, 2, 3, or 4 for them if they were to lose that SEC title.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I would assume probably 2 or 3 because I would imagine Bama would go to 1. Because you're going to avoid at all costs a rematch of that game in the first round of the playoffs, right?
Right.
If you're the committee. So, yeah, I think what you take out of last night, they patted Cincinnati on the head like a little kid. But they still need so much to happen in order for them to win. Like what they need, gosh, they almost, I honestly think for them, they need that doomsday scenario in the Big Ten.
With the Michigan win
and then a loss, and or whoever.
Whoever wins, and then they lose.
Lose to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, and that just totally eliminates the Big Ten.
That's right. The Big Ten's champ has three losses.
Yeah.
They're not going to put in a two-loss non-champ. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
For me, that is Cincinnati's way. Even though they're ranked number four in it right now, I don't believe that for a second. I just don't – until I see it. You know, I know we're going to talk a whole bunch today about until I see it, I won't believe it, with games that are going to be going on this week.
Yeah.
I'm that way with this committee. I don't believe they'll put in Cincinnati ahead of a bunch of these one-loss teams that are conference champions. I just don't believe it. And so that gives us to OU and OSU. I think the path is clear for either one of them. Win twice, and I think you're in.
I do too.
I think that path is absolutely clear.
Because the Pac-12 has been eliminated.
That's right.
I mean, they're done. And so you got your four conference. So, you know, I was going through the scenarios in my head. Georgia wins the SEC. That knocks Alabama out. Georgia gets a spot. The one-loss Big Ten team, champion, they get a spot. And then the Big 12, if it's a one-loss Big 12 champ, sorry, Baylor, but if it's OSU or OU with one loss, they get that spot. Fourth spot, what are we thinking?
I think
we don't like the, you know, all of this conversation, we haven't even mentioned the ACC.
Yeah, they're out.
They're out.
I think in that scenario.
So does Notre Dame have a chance here?
I think.
Or does, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I actually think. And this is going to make a lot of people mad if it happens.
I know where you're going.
I think, you know, okay, here's how I'd put that. If what you just said happens, it would, and we're going to put the Big 12 champ with one loss in, which I think that's there, that leaves three teams in the argument. I think that leaves Cincinnati. I think that leaves Notre Dame. And it also leaves two-loss Bama. If the SEC title game is a barn burner.
Right.
I don't, as much as they would want to, I don't think they'd put Bama in, because then at that point, the only place you could put them is fourth, and that would mean a rematch. Which maybe if it's an absolute classic, maybe they lean that way. But I actually, as much as this goes against their everything they've ever said, the intrigue and the allure and the tradition and the power, even though they lost the game they played to Cincinnati, I think they'd take Notre Dame.
I agree. A little conspiracy theory here, but more eyeballs would watch a two-loss Alabama than an undefeated Cincinnati.
Oh,
especially if it's a rematch with Georgia. If that scenario
if it's
plays
a great
out,
game, if it's a if great it's a game,
in the title, the SEC title game, yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, here's Edney. The committee's tired of OU. Not that
Nathan said that. I didn't say that.
I mean, the truth of it is, if Oklahoma wins both games, they're going to be in this tournament. Period. It's just the truth. I mean, everyone wants to look at it right now and go, oh, my gosh, they're behind two teams. They're behind two lost teams. What you're looking at now doesn't matter. You know what I mean? This order isn't what they really think the order is. In my mind, it never has been.
It just sets up for what the order will be at the end.
That's right. But the movement happens from now to the end. Mm-hmm. When it's this way every year, we start seeing these teams kind of play either their rival games or each other sometimes. This year, obviously, with the Ohio State and Michigan game being so huge, Bedlam being so huge, those things are so much more fluid than what I think we're all conditioned to. Like AP poll voting for all these years, where it's just like a ladder. You go up a rung or two when the other teams fall. That's not the way this is going to be. It's not the way it has been. That's why, I mean, it's why you see a number six, Ohio State, in 2014, the first year, jump two teams that didn't lose. You know, that would never happen in an AP poll.
Right.
At the end of the season.
Yeah.
No, but with the way Ohio State won, they jumped over Baylor and TCU, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and a major one is the helmet.
Sure.
And that's going to come into play. Now, the one thing – I don't know how to say this other than just saying it. I think a one-loss Oklahoma is more of a lock than a one-loss Oklahoma State.
I was
because
about
of the
that.
Helmet.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And I was looking more early in the season when the question was asked, could a one-loss Big 12 champ in OU, if it was OU in this scenario, could they get in? I was saying, I don't think they can. But, I mean, I was very hypocritical because I was saying the complete opposite because of, say, a one-loss Alabama over a no-loss Cincinnati. If that was, you know, because it's the helmet. It's the brand. And I see what you're saying. It's sad but true. But that is a big factor into this.
Having said that, though, with the way that Oklahoma State has played, and especially if they – it's not a fluke them beating Oklahoma this week and then beating Baylor more than likely in the Big 12 title game. That's where I think, you know, the question right here, does eye test matter? I think it will help Oklahoma State with the dominance that they've had. I mean, over the last 4 weeks, their margin of victory is higher than anybody in the country at over 35 a game.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's the part of the schedule where games get tight and they've just blown everybody away. And now the names that they've beaten haven't been that impressive. But if you look back every single week, the opponent they played over these last four played about their best game the week before. You know, Kansas against Oklahoma, that's the best game they played. And then they just got demolished in Stillwater. You know, TCU played great against Baylor. Just got demolished. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Tech beat Iowa State and just got demolished. It has happened over and over down the stretch here for teams that have played Oklahoma State. So I think the one thing OSU has going for it, way more than OU does, is the eye test and how good they've looked. And people are starting to figure out, my God, this defense is unbelievable. And yeah. I've got a bunch of stats I'm going to talk about in the last segment that are just for this time, as far as the way football's played now, especially in this conference, for somebody to have the defensive numbers nationally, not just in the league, but nationally that Oklahoma State has, is off the charts. Just absolutely off the charts. And so I think to wrap a bow on it, going into the last week of the regular season, if you're OU or you're OSU, you're rooting for either one of them. I think the one thing that you have to hope for is Alabama lose.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as they keep winning, they're still alive, and that takes the spot away.
That's right.
Clear cut.
Alabama losing, and it'd be really nice if it happened this week in the Iron Bowl.
It's always possible.
Because then it doesn't matter if they lose a close one to Georgia. They got three losses, and there's no
– No way.
Surely not.
No way.
Surely not.
There'd even be an argument they shouldn't be in a New Year's Six Bowl.
So that's the one thing. And then just as a little cherry on top, a bonus, if either Cincinnati or Notre Dame would lose also, then it would be then there would be absolutely no argument about who would be there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's where you have to have Bama lose, in my mind. Because Georgia isn't losing to Georgia Tech, and then they're in. So that's two. The Big Ten champ is three. Now you've got a giant argument in four. That's where I personally think Oklahoma State would be in a better spot than OU as the one-loss Big 12 champ because of the dominance they've had. And, the eye test works in OSU's favor more than it does OU's.
Absolutely.
Against a undefeated Cincinnati or a Notre Dame, even though maybe the helmet is against Cincinnati and OSU, the way that OSU has played, and especially if they blow out the Sooners in Bedlam and win convincingly in the Big 12 title game against Baylor. And if it's OU if Tech happens to upset Baylor, that's even more a notch on their belt, I think.
Right.
So I agree. The Big 12, I think they came out as big a winner as anybody last night.
Yes.
With three teams in the top 10, you know, only the mighty SEC can say that.
Let me ask you. You know, there is that scenario. If you're an OU fan, you want Baylor, you know, if Baylor loses to Tech Saturday, then we already have a Big 12 championship game locked in even before the game kicks off. I believe that game's 11 or 2:30 game.
Yeah, it's an early game.
But as an OU fan, do you want Baylor to win that game to help that impressive loss factor.
Oh, sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You want Baylor to win that game.
You'd much rather have them win that game and OU just
absolutely
win Bedlam twice.
That's right. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Wouldn't look good if Texas romps on Baylor.
Tech.
I'm sorry, Tech. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. No. That wouldn't look good at all. No, that's what you want. You want Baylor to win.
Yeah.
And if you're an OU fan, you want to win Bedlam twice.
Yeah.
For sure. That's the best case scenario.
Part of me yesterday, as an OU fan,
because
I was
here's the
thinking,
thing.
Man, I'd really like Baylor to lose. That way we know going into Bedlam, hey, we get another crack at these guys. If you know what I'm saying, but as far as college football playoff chances are concerned, you want that loss to look pretty dang good.
Well, and here's what, with the way the committee has ranked teams so far this year, if Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State, I don't know if Oklahoma State moves anywhere because they've kept that head-to-head a thing all throughout this.
Yes.
Baylor's still ahead of Oklahoma, even though they have two losses right now at 8-10. So that means to me, if Oklahoma were to win this weekend, they've got to be one in the Big 12, OSU 2, Baylor 3. And so OSU, then, the opponent you're playing in the Big 12 title game is still high, and the team that beat you is still high, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really interesting stuff.
Yeah. If I was surprised by anything, I think it is that the Big 12, maybe I should have known this after Oregon got throttled, but that the Big 12 is still alive in this thing. And
yeah.
I'm not just one team.
No. Oh, you know, you're both there.
Oklahomas are still alive.
100%. Joining us now, longtime voice of the Clinton Red Tornadoes ahead of the semifinal game between the Elks and Clinton on Friday. It's Dennis Smith. Dennis, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing wonderful. Looking forward to turkeys and football, I guess, over the weekend, not only at Weatherford, but up in Stillwater, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Big weekend.
It is. Okay, you know, sometimes Elk City and Clinton play early. Sometimes they play late in the regular season. This year it was late, so it was just a couple of weeks back. What have the Red Tornadoes done since then, after the blowout of Bethany and then in their couple of playoff wins to set up this matchup?
Oh, I think for the most part, just kept on keeping on. I think Coach Higbee would probably say he was disappointed, and he was pleased with the way we finished the season out against Bethany, of course, and then the first round playoff game, even though Clinton won it pretty handily, I think he and the team, and in fact I know they were disappointed in the way they played, just didn't seem as crisp, and it was not a well-executed game, but yet Clinton was good enough to overcome. The other team helped us out quite a bit. I think they had like 7 turnovers in the game, and, you know, it's hard to win anything when you have that many turnovers. And you know, Clinton, uncharacteristically, had a couple in that first-round playoff game, but after watching the game last week, I think they've kind of got things going back on track. I thought their execution was much better against a decent opponent and, you know, came away with a pretty good win. So I think they have to feel pretty good. But first thing I want to do is say congratulations to Coach Meadows and the Elks. I think it's, you know, you all have done it the hard way, but got on the road, got a couple of victories, got you a place at the semifinal game. That's a tremendous accomplishment for that program.
Yeah, we're just happy we don't have to travel across the state. So I don't know if I'm more excited about the game or more excited about less travel. But anyways, yeah, it's pretty fun over here in Elk City, and it's pretty normal in Clinton when they get this far. How does, I mean, let's look at the other side of the thing. You know, the last time Clinton and Elk played, obviously it was a one-sided affair, but I'm sensing from talking to other Clinton fans that they're taking Elk City seriously. Is that the case? Is it?
Well, I think, I mean, again, and a lot of this is me personally, knowing, you know, the background on a lot of things, and certainly knowing the background on how good a coach Coach Meadows is, and you know, I can remember some playoff runs that he put together while he's at Clinton that were truly very, very good, and I have no doubt that he's got his team playing at a good level. And I think for anybody on Clinton's team to take for granted, oh well, we just all we got to do is throw out or helmet and it'll be fine. That is certainly the wrong attitude. I go back to the fact it's hard to beat a team twice in the same season, certainly within a few weeks. Things are going to be, what didn't work last time, what could work this time. I guarantee you, I feel like both teams will be taking each other with respect, as both teams deserve. This is a state semifinal. These are two of the four teams still standing, and anybody who doesn't take the opponent seriously at this stage of the ball game is fooling themselves. I don't care who it is. So I just believe, and having talked to Coach Higby, I know that they're working hard. They have to. They can't afford to have a letdown. They've worked hard to get to this point, this point of the year, and their efforts are going to hopefully they get the message across to their team that you need to forget that you beat this team 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you need to concentrate on it. This is a good football team because they're in the state semifinals just like you. And it wasn't easy to get here. There's a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point. Well, they've accomplished the same thing you have. Now you have to play each other, and you can throw out the records because this is sudden death. You win, you go on. You lose, season's over. It's simple as that.
You know Coach Meadows from the time over there. I want you to put on his hat and what he's thinking, because that Clinton defense has been so good all season long, maybe outside of the second half against Heritage Hall. Outside of that, they've been awesome all year. Put on the hat for Coach Meadows. How does he move the ball with what the Elks like to do, what he likes to do? What's the best way to do that against that ferocious Clinton defense?
Well, I would never put myself in the same vein as Dave Meadows as far as being a coach, but I'd have to think you would study the tape completely to see what you did have some success with, and see where you made your mistakes, and try to work on those. Now, again, I have witnessed firsthand a Coach Meadows coach team drive to a state championship, in fact, twice. I had the privilege of doing it twice early in my broadcasting career. And, I will say this. Back then, Dave was consistent. Mm-hmm. He knew what his team was capable of. He knew that if they executed, they would be fine. And I suspect he'll go into this game very similar. Now, that's not to say he might not throw a wrinkle or two in there, and I'll be shocked if he doesn't, but I do think he's basically going to rely on the things that have brought Elk City success. And I think Coach Higby's going to be the same. Yeah. I think they know, they feel confident in what they can do, what they can execute correctly. I think they're going to rely heavily on the same things, but again, I wouldn't be surprised to see a new wrinkle here or there. All these coaches, one thing I've learned in watching high school football over the years, they have a lot of stuff that they work on that they don't, a lot of times, at least that's kind of been my experience, that they may not show till late in the season for one reason or another. They might show something one week, just to give the opponent something to think about for the next week. And then they may go to something completely different. I've been amazed over the years how many times I've seen that done. But I believe both of these coaches they believe if your team plays fundamentally sound and if they execute, they're going to be in the ball. I believe both of them come from that lane of coaching. I don't think they're just going to revamp their offenses or defenses just because they played each other 4 weeks ago and the results were what they were. I do think they will try to tweak it. And again, it's hard for me to anticipate what Coach Meadows might do, but I do think he feels secure enough in what his team is capable of, and he knows that if they execute correctly, they'll have success. I, I can see both teams relying heavily on what got them here.
Yeah.
Again, you have to. Sometimes you want to throw some different looks in. Sometimes you want to try maybe something that you're pretty sure your opponent's not going to be expected. But as far as just basing your whole game around it, I don't think they will. I think they'll both come at each other with what they've had success with and what they feel like they can continue to have success with. Now, if both teams come out in completely different things, then you can say, well, so there's a lot he knew.
Well, I'm exactly the same way, because it seems to me like these guys, they have a formula to success. And they're, you know, deviate off of it just a hair here or there with a formation or a different play. But for the most part, I think they both kind of have the same attitude of, you know, whoever can whip the man across from them play after play all night long is going to be the one that wins.
Exactly. And I think a lot of it comes down to defense. And Clinton has had a strong defense this year, as I suspect at times Elk City has too. I don't think you get this far without, you know, some defensive success. And I just feel like that's what they're going to have to be based themselves on. You know, they've basically had a week to prepare for each other. Elk City had to go on the road last week. They probably were not favored since they were the 3 seed and they were playing a 1 seed. Truthfully, I was not surprised that they won. In fact, Alan and Marty and I had talked beforehand, and I said, gentlemen, I said, I will not be surprised if we see Elk City next week. And Marty Wandry was the first one to say, yeah, I agree. And Alan says, yeah, I can see it. And sure enough, it happened. I just felt like of the matchups that 4A1 got, I felt like we were fortunate to match up with that particular district from the east side, and part of it was, you know, it was a very contested district. I think they had 3 teams that actually had 1 loss, and it kind of came down to points, which told me that they were all pretty much in the same vein. We had a pretty good read on Wagner just simply because we'd played him last year, but that was a very senior dominated team. They lost, I don't know, probably 20 of 22 starters if you look across the offense and defense, because they were seniors.
Right.
It was a very experienced team, and they just, you know, I knew that graduation had hit them hard, yet they were still in it, and I credit their coach. You know, Condit is a very capable coach and very good coach, and you know, they were right there in the mix again, and so I felt like all three of those teams were pretty much at the same level. Now, I felt like the power, again, this is based on what I saw last year and what I remember about the rosters. Poto was a fairly young team last year. Now, they were a good team, and I know they had a lot of starters back. And I know Tuttle's been tough all year. They've had the number one ranking, but I won't be surprised whichever team comes out of that other semifinal. It won't surprise me because I think those are both very good opponents. I'm not really worried about that. I'm worried about this game coming up. I think Elk City's a formidable foe. I think their coach is an excellent coach, and I think the Red Tornadoes are going to have all they want, and they better be prepared to play the best they can.
You know, the last few years, when you get to this point of the season, it seemed like it was East dominated, with maybe a team from the West representing, that being Weatherford, of course, Clinton last year. But how good does it feel that we got 2 teams in 4A1 representing one side of the bracket? I love that feeling. It feels like old times.
Oh, I'm elated. I'm elated. I just feel like that the trend is moving back to the West. I thought Clinton was headed that way. You know, Coach Higby had a team that probably should have been in the finals his first year. It was a senior-dominated team, and, you know, they they spotted Bethany 21 points and still managed to take it to overtime and lost on a missed extra point. I mean, it was a crushing blow for that particular team 3-4 years ago. But, you know, I could see the trend starting to swing even back then. I think Clinton's run to the state title, which was very unexpected, very similar to what Elk City is doing last year. We were a third-place team last year in the district, and we made it to the finals. It can be done, and I'm quite certain that Coach Higbee is bringing that point to his charges probably even as we speak. You know, guys, think back a year ago. Nobody expected us to be in the semifinals or the finals, and yet we were there. Now look at this team you're playing tonight. They were the third-place team in the district. Yeah, you handled them pretty well early in the season, but you can throw that out the door, okay? They're playing well. They're playing with a purpose, just like you are, and you better be ready. And I think, again, it won't be from the coaches preaching it. I know that because, you know, I've talked to them since the game the past Friday, and I know they're concerned. They know they've got a team that's feels pretty good about itself coming into this game, and hopefully the Reds are too. And I expect to see a very good ball game. I don't expect to see a blowout. I really don't.
You mentioned that run last year for Clinton. I was around guys back in, you know, my junior and senior year over here, losing that game at Weatherford in the finals to Clinton, and how much that motivated that group of guys from the moment they got off the bus back here that day, clear until walking off the field in Stillwater a year later. How much do you sense that that's helping the Red Tornadoes throughout this season to get back to the game that they lost a year ago against Wagner?
Well, I think it's been a driving force. They made no bones even at the preseason, you know, booster club meetings and whatnot, meet the players. You know, that was obviously their goal, and it still remains. Nothing's changed. They put themselves in they've done the things that they needed to do to get to that position. They've done it in a lot of ways that I'm sure a lot of people didn't really anticipate. I anticipated defensively we would be probably a very good team because we actually only lost probably three key players from defense from last year, maybe four. But I knew the talent was there and your base, especially your front seven were all coming back. They were younger last year, and they've just taken off this year. I mean, we did have to replace some people in the secondary. One huge free safety last year was just tremendous. And, you know, a young man has stepped up. He's not the same athlete, but he's a different type player. He's a smart player. He always seems to be in the right position to make a play, and that's what you need. You know, you got to have somebody there. So they found the pieces to not, you know, that they were able to maintain that defense that really carried them last year. And it is, and to a certain extent, it's been that way this year. But I think that probably the surprise this year has been how explosive the offense has become. You know, we lost an excellent tailback last year. And, you know, truthfully, we don't have that kind of player this year. But we've actually, I think I mentioned to you all last time, we've actually got a two-headed monster at tailback. We got two young men. Neither one of them are very big, but they're fast and they're quick, and they both have kind of developed a knack to find that open space, and they're good about finding the cutback lanes. And with speed, you know, you can correct a lot of things, and they both have an immense amount of it, both of them.
Well, Dennis, man, thanks so much for joining us. Hope you guys have a happy Thanksgiving over there, everybody in Clinton, and we'll see you Friday night over in Weatherford in what we hope will be a good ball game.
Yeah, I think it'll be an excellent game. And gentlemen, my pleasure. Good luck to you all. Have a happy Thanksgiving as well, and hopefully we'll see you all Friday night.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dennis. Good luck to the Red Tornadoes.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
You bet. Dennis Smith, longtime voice of the Clinton Red Tornadoes. I think he hit exactly on what I've been feeling as far as, you know, everybody's asking, what's the adjustments? I don't know that there are going to be any. The adjustment is play better. for the Elks. The adjustment is be more physical.
I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
I get it, but
Wrinkle here, wrinkle there.
A smart man once said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Yes, I Googled that definition. That was Albert Einstein, by the way. I think we need to see some wrinkles.
It'll be something.
But
here's the deal. If you don't block anybody and you don't get in the backfield, any wrinkle you try to make doesn't work.
Sure. But guess what? At this point of the year, you're going to see wrinkles from both sides, like Dennis said.
I think so.
I think we're going to have a fun ball game.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's running the football on both sides.
Hat on hat, who wins?
That's right. Yeah. Thanks again to Dennis Smith, longtime voice of the Red Tornadoes, for joining us ahead of the semifinals on Friday. You and I were talking, there at the end and then in the break. You know, I think one of the flash words has been adjustments, and for good reason. I totally get it, because especially on this side of it, over here for the Elks, you get beat 34-0 in the manner that you got beat. Obviously, adjustments are going to be a word that's going to be a buzzword, because things didn't go well the first time, right?
Yeah,
and so I understand that, but I guess my point is more: you have to be able to be more physical first off. You cannot get pushed around on the lines like the Elks did the first time. And then the second thing is, I never really want a team that I root for or any game, it doesn't matter. You hate to see a team try so hard to do something different that it takes away from what got them there and the reason they're good. And so, you know, the Elks throwing it 30 times on Friday night just doesn't seem, first off, very likely, and second off, like the best way to win. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's not the – why would you go away from your strength? But I get it when you see what happened that first game and the way the Clinton dominated, it would lend you to think that way of, oh, my gosh, we got to do something totally different or it's just going to be the same result.
Yeah. So that's – and I get it too. You play better, you win. I mean, or you'll have more success and possibly win. You just – And I get that, too. And we know Elk City is capable of doing that. We've seen that, how they've responded since that loss. They can be a physical team up front. They can be dominant at times up front to allow Daylen to have you know, a good night. But when we start seeing that, okay, Clinton's making adjustments and it's time to throw some wrinkles. I'm not saying totally throw out the game plan and change it up and don't do do something you haven't done all year. That'd be idiotic, because that could lead to disaster. But, you know, little wrinkles, just little wrinkles. You know, how many times have we ran trick plays?
Yeah, I mean, not many. It's all reverse.
And you know they're in the playbook.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean,
my point is, now it's time to open up the playbook.
Yeah, you might do a couple. But at the end of the day, the Elks are going to win by blocking the guys up front and getting Daylen going. That's just the way they win.
That's step one. You got to get him going.
And it's hard as hell to do against that defense. I get it.
It is.
I totally get it. And then on the other side, I think Dennis made a great point about defense. The better the Elks defense can play, the less pressure it puts on the offense having to do things out of their comfort zone. No, if the winner of this game scores 14 or 17 points, I think the Elks have a fantastic chance to win. The winner of this game's in the 28 range, maybe not.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think the lower scoring, obviously the spread can't get as far away from each other. That's just numbers. But the way the flow of the game goes, I think that gives Elk City so much better chance to win if they only have to get to, say, 17, maybe 21, as opposed to 28, 35, up in that range like they did last week. I don't see anybody scoring 35 points on Clinton's defense at this point in the season. But having said that, I think that, man, if the score is 17-14 or, you know, 17-10, then I'm wondering who won. If the score is 28-14, I'm not asking that question.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bedlam. I found this. I was telling you in the break. It does seem like all the talking's coming from one direction, at least player-wise. Fans, it's both sides.
That's every year.
Yeah, no doubt. But from the players, it seems like it's only one direction, and it's a shocking direction. It's coming from Stillwater. Here is the quarterback, Spencer Sanders.
Well, I already know what's going to happen. You know, obviously, if we, well, you know, I'm going to say we're going to win. I got confidence in our team. I can already feel it. You know, if we win, then they're going to bring up history stats and all that. But honestly, I'm just going to smile. And, you know, we won, so I guess it's not going to bother me. So it's like leaving a bad taste in somebody's mouth when they're leaving. You know, it's like you're gonna have to deal with that. Like your last game with me, you lost. So I don't want to hear about no history. I don't want to hear about stats. I want to hear about that game.
Interesting comments. And it, you know, with the Tay Martin comment after the win on Saturday, that. Listen, I love to see confidence from Oklahoma State here because they haven't had any success, and at least it looks like on the surface. They're not going into this game thinking, oh, no, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we mentioned it last week. There's a fine line between being confident and cocky. And you want your players to be confident. You know, there's going to be the diehard OU fans who see that as being cocky. And after hearing that, I didn't heard that until just now. It's just confidence. I think it's confidence. And that's what you want out of your quarterback, your leader of the team. Just like we said last week, you know, Corey came in, he had a lot of confidence about him, and he proved it on the field. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being confident. There's some words, some buzzwords that could be said by other players via social media or whatnot that can come off as the other word. And that you got to be very careful not to motivate your opponent by giving them bulletin board material. I don't think that necessarily is bulletin board material. I just think it's just a confident quarterback, and he has every right to be confident with the way the team's playing.
Yeah, and I understand his comment about don't come at me with the other games. This is the one that matters. Of course it is. Because
it's the one that matters until the next one.
Well, it's the one. It's the only one that can matter for him because he's never beaten OU.
Right.
You know, and so I can understand that. Yesterday we talked about OSU offense and OU versus the OU defense. Let's go the other way here in the last 10 minutes or so. Oklahoma State's defense is the best thing in the Big 12, the best unit in the Big 12. It's really not even close. But here's the numbers they are nationally. You know, it's one thing to be, hey, we're the best defense in the Big 12. Well, for a lot of years, that didn't make a hill of beans. Hey, great, you're like 60th best in the country. It's not the case this year. So OSU gets up 268 yards per game. That's third nationally. They have only given up 15 touchdowns all season defensively. That's second behind only Georgia. 4.3 yards per play. That's fourth in the nation. 85 rush yards a game. That's fourth. 2.7 per rush. That's fifth. Giving up 9 touchdowns total rushing. That's 13th. 14.9. So basically 15 points per game. That's second. And then, okay, so they're great at rushing defense. Pass defense, 182. That's 10th. 6.2 per attempt, 13th, 11 per completion, that's 13th. Only 6 passing touchdowns given up, that's 3rd nationally. With the struggles that Oklahoma's offense has had over the last couple of weeks, how does OU move the ball against that?
Well, and I was hearing this yesterday, and it's true, the OSU defense, they're very good at disguising their defense. A lot of pre-snap stuff. It's hard for quarterbacks to get a read on them and what they're doing or what they're bringing. I think to combat that, you got to disguise your offense and you got to show them stuff that they've never seen before, either by virtue of your previous game film, OU's previous game film, or other opponents. So, you know, you got to get your quarterback, in that case, Williams, maybe Rattler, you never know. You got to give them the best opportunity. And standing in the pocket is not going to do it, I think. And this was also said yesterday, I can't take credit for this, but roll in the pocket, you know, getting your quarterback on the run a little bit. I mean, Williams is good at running the football. It feels like he wants to be a statue in the pocket sometimes. But I don't want to turn an answer to a long one. But I think, quite simply, disguise your offense. You know, we talk about making changes. For OU to have a chance against this defense, you got to make a lot of changes, a lot of wrinkles, a lot of different things that OSU's never seen before. And that's a tough ask.
Yeah,
that's tough to do, and you only have a week to prepare to do it.
I think the one advantage, the thing that's probably overlooked, Mark Rogers brought this to Twitter on Monday. When you look at the guys that started for OSU on the defensive side of the football last Saturday night in Lubbock, the youngest guys were 21 years old.
Yeah. They've really taken advantage of this super senior
100%. Yeah. And that's just a luxury that not a lot of people have. And when you talk about those disguises – And in that, and who was it? I think it was either, I think it was Sonny Cumbie that said after the game last week, you just don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
Because they're so experienced that they can wait till even after the ball is snapped to get to where they know they have to be with whatever defense they're running, whatever coverages, schemes that they've got going on. That's just a luxury they have that nobody else does.
Absolutely.
Part of that is because they've got, you know, they haven't had the top-notch defenders that left to go to the draft. And everybody's there. You know, I think it's 4 21-year-olds, 5 22-year-olds, a 23 and a 24. Think about that. Christian Holmes, 24. Caleb Williams, what, 18?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge difference. 19, yeah. I think maybe he's 19. But either way, that's still 5 years worth of football.
Absolutely.
And it's not like Williams was the day one starter. This dude has played 5 games.
Right.
So that, I mean, that is such a tough ask for Oklahoma's offense. Now, I will say this. The one place where OU has a distinct advantage when they have the ball has been in the red zone. OU is number one in red zone offense in the entire nation. At the 96% score rate, 77% of those have been touchdowns. 41 of the 53 times they've entered the red zone, they scored a touchdown. That's number one nationally.
That's one of those trivia questions that no one would ever answer.
That's right. Because
who's number one in the red zone? No one would say OU.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times you would, but
oh,
not
sure,
this
but
year
not
because
this year.
Of the way it seemed like they struggled. Now, OSU on the other side, they're 95th total in red zone defense.
Huh.
They give up 87% scores, but hold the phone. That's a little bit misleading.
Because
of their touchdown percentage.
Right.
First off, they've only given up 23 attempts in the red zone, which is a shockingly low number. Only 11 touchdowns. So 48% of the time. For Oklahoma to win, they score 77% touchdowns. OSU holds their opponents to 48. That number has to be on the OU side of things for the Sooners to win because I think with OSU's defensive prowess, those red zone opportunities are not going to be as prevalent as they have been in other games. You know, and you think about, okay, what's the recipe for Oklahoma to win this game? I think a turnover in the red zone type or a defensive touchdown, special teams touchdown, things of that nature. That's kind of the recipe. OU fans aren't used to being underdogs. That's what the underdog does to win games. Think back to 2013 right quick.
Okay.
Think about how that game went. OSU was a huge favorite in Stillwater in 2013. Oklahoma got not one, but two special teams touchdowns at that game, if you'll remember. Mm-hmm. Jalen Saunders' punt return and then the fake field goal for a touchdown. And it still took Blake Bell's incredible drive at the end of the game to win that one.
And a lucky strip of a near interception.
Absolutely.
Hey, luck's a part of it, man. Luck's a part of it.
LeColton Bester, thank you.
Yes.
As Justin Gilbert had the game in his hands as he came down to the ground and got the ball knocked away from him. I don't know that these teams are that far. I don't know. But who's going to win?
Well, I'll say this with zero confidence or maybe a little bit of confidence, but I just have to stick with it because I'm not going to talk out both sides of my face. But until I see something different from OSU on the field and especially play calling from Mike Gundy in this game, it's like something about this game and Gundy, he gets in this mental block and this conservative play calling, and you don't want to do that against your rival. I don't know what it is. Maybe all this player talk is coming from him because he has the confidence too. But until I see something different, I'm picking OU. It's going to be close. I think it's going to be a low scoring because I think both defenses are good and the offenses are okay. But outside, I mean, listen, OSU's offense statistically is the best in the conference. But I got to stick with OU. I don't want to give you a score. I'll say something to the tune of, I mean, shoot, I could even see it be like 21-20.
You got a 21-14 OU on the text line. My personal what do you think?
225-9698.
Right quick.
21-17, I'm locking it in. OU.
21-17 OU for you. We've got 24-13 OU. Anybody else? Anybody?
I know. I'll tell you this. OSU is going to lead for the majority of this game. It's going to take something late for OU. I think we're going to get one of these classic Bedlam games.
OU has been very, very good in close games this year. There's no doubt about that. All that's fine. I understand the thought of that. I understand the history of it. I really do. I totally get it. I think that matters when the teams are close. I don't know how close these two teams really are. I mean, if you took away, and I know a lot of the reason why people are going to pick OU is because you can't take away the helmet. But if you took away the helmets, no one in their right mind would pick Oklahoma. If you just watch the teams play. You know what I'm saying? If you didn't know who was who and you watched.
Team A versus Team B.
No one in their right mind would pick Oklahoma. And here's what is, to me, the difference in the game. Oklahoma State's defense versus a freshman quarterback. They knocked out the guy from Kansas at halftime. Chandler Morris threw for a billion yards against Baylor the week before they played OSU. No thank you. Texas Tech's quarterback went up and down the field against Iowa State. No thank you. Not barely 100 yards. Caleb Williams last week looked like a fish out of water. Like his confidence was shot. He looked like a freshman.
Yeah.
And that matter of fact, that's 2 weeks in a row. He did it at Baylor too. Mm-hmm. He has never been in the cauldron that he's going to be on Saturday night. Likely to be the last bedlam in Stillwater for a long time.
Yeah.
With that loaded team, that experienced team defensively, I get it. Riley can come up with wizardry, but he can't come up with near enough. Oklahoma State's going to whip Oklahoma. Not 2011 whipping, but there's going to be no doubt at the end of this one which one is the better team. And then in Oklahoma State, we'll either play Baylor or OU depending on that
Baylor outcome.
The Baylor outcome in Jerry's World. Now, I will say this. If Baylor loses and what I just said happens, I may not pick the same team next week.
Really?
Yeah.
You think there'll be like a euphoria of finally beating OU and then...
And then the pressure is ramped to the gills. That's when I'd be worried about Gundy.
I can see that. If Baylor doesn't turn the ball over against OSU...
Everybody have a great weekend. Happy Thanksgiving.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.